Hi, I'm Jacqueline Kinser, and for the past 5 years, I've been helping families all around the globe to overcome their breastfeeding challenges. And this is the first non-clinical breastfeeding podcast that shows you how to rock breastfeeding and master motherhood through practical tips, mindset shifts, and honest conversation to create a confident and empowering breastfeeding journey. This is the Breastfeeding Talk Podcast. Welcome back to the Breastfeeding Talk Podcast. I'm your host, Jacqueline Kinser, and today's guest is one that I am very excited to bring to you. I record these episodes and I go, wow, that's the best episode yet. And it just keeps happening. And it's amazing. And I hope that you're enjoying the episodes as much as I am. In fact, if you are enjoying the episodes, please do me a huge favor. Head over to Apple Podcasts. You can leave a review. That helps our ranking, which helps our podcast get discovered by listeners who would love to come across this information and level of support in a podcast. Spotify also allows you to leave a rating, so we would encourage you to do that if you're a Spotify listener, whatever method works best for you. And then, of course, anytime you're listening to this episode, something really resonates with you. If it's one of our little sort of sound bites that you see us posting over on Instagram or YouTube Shorts, or you want to take a screenshot on your phone of you listening to the episode, post that to your stories, tag us, share it with a friend, spread the word, because chances are, if you've benefited from something you've heard in one of these episodes, there's someone in your network that will benefit from it as well. So I want to introduce Dr. Susan Landers to you. She is an amazing human, and I'm so glad I got to talk to her. I feel like I should do a little, like, I don't know, sort of B-sides to these episodes, because the conversations I have with our guests before and after we hit record are just wonderful. And sometimes I feel like I need to go back and hit the record button. But that's kind of my little treat as the interviewer that I get to partake in. So Susan Landers is a neonatologist, a pediatrician who has extra training in the care of sick and premature babies. And she attended Auburn University and the Medical University of South Carolina. She completed her pediatric residency training at the University of Texas Southwestern Medical School in Dallas, Texas, and a neonatology fellowship at Baylor College of Medicine and Texas Children's Hospital in Houston, Texas. Dr. Landers practiced academic neonatology for 14 years on the faculty of two medical schools. After that, she worked for a pediatrics medical group in private practice neonatology for 20 years. While caring for patients full-time in private practice, she served as a speaker for the Texas Department of State Health Services. She was the medical director of the Mother's Milk Bank at Austin and served on the Milk Bank's board of directors. She was elected as a fellow in the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine. Additionally, she served on the executive committee of the section on breastfeeding for the AAP, the American Academy of Pediatrics, for 6 years. Together with her husband, Dr. Philip Berry, she raised three children, one son and two daughters. Now she's retired and she resides in Austin, Texas. So if that doesn't give you an idea of the wonderful, esteemed Dr. Landers and the incredible expertise that she brings to the table, I don't know what will, but you're going to have to hear it from her yourself. And without further ado, I would love for you to get to know Dr. Landers and her wonderful knowledge and perspective on breastfeeding, human milk, and the state of new motherhood. Listen in. Welcome to the show, Dr. Landers. I'm honored to have you here with us today because you are just a wealth of expertise and very unique in your profession. And I'm super excited for the listeners to hear your version of a brief overview of your background and experience as a neonatologist, your involvement with breastfeeding medicine, and all the things. So tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, first of all, thank you for the invitation. Any person, especially an IBCLC, who talks about breastfeeding medicine is tops in my book, because we do not spend enough time supporting breastfeeding mothers in our culture. And I'm so glad you're doing this with your podcast. I am retired now, but I practiced as a neonatologist for 34 years. And I loved that specialty for a couple of reasons. It was fun to work with mothers and babies and to see babies get better pretty quickly, grow and thrive. And it was also really exciting intensive care medicine can be stressful, but because we have such good technology, ventilators, surfactant, lines, tubes, breast milk, babies are doing better and better all the time. And so it was a field that I loved working in. When I started in neonatology, we were giving formula to all the babies. We would soup it up, you know, to 24, 28 calories per ounce. And the little guys wouldn't do very well. They didn't grow very well. They all got necrotizing enterocolitis. It was just abysmal. That was back in the 80s. And the La Leche League had come back into full force. And breastfeeding was back as a trend. And in the late 80s and early 90s, mothers were beginning to express their breast milk and ask to use breast milk in the NICU. I nursed my first child briefly, a few months, because I went back to work and didn't have a good pump. I nursed my second child for 6 months because I went back to work and sat around in the NICU mom's pumping room talking to other mothers. It was so fun because we all traded secrets and advice, and I could tell what was going on with them. And then I would kind of, you know, sneak back into the NICU and say, "You need to talk to Ms. So-and-so. She's very discouraged." Anyway, as we learned more and more about the use of breast milk in the NICU, and as we started to get breast milk that moms pumped or expressed to feed their own babies, we began to see that babies did better when they were fed mom's milk, but they didn't grow as well. And that was a time when the fortifiers were being developed, and there were powder fortifiers before there were liquid fortifiers. It was an exciting time because various units were doing different things and telling mothers different things. We had a suspicion that breast milk fed babies who were sick in the NICU survived more often, had fewer infections, and definitely got more necrotizing enterocolitis. But until some randomized controlled multi-center trials proved that, some nurseries were still not pushing breast milk use for NICU babies. And I'm talking about full term, not just preterm babies. Once the trials proved that breast milk fed, human milk fed neonates lived more often, died less often, had less necrotizing enterocolitis, had less nosocomial infections, then the cow was out of the barn, so to speak. Then everybody jumped on the bandwagon and started learning how to support the moms who are crucial to the whole endeavor because she was the producer of the breast milk. And so that brings us to the early 2000s. And I became so interested in how to support moms in the NICU. I was at Arkansas Children's Hospital then, and I helped develop a mother's milk bank in that children's hospital. And it was such a great experience because that was a state where breastfeeding rates were very low. But if you told mothers that pumping their milk could save their baby's life and decrease their baby's rate of infection, they said, "Oh yeah, I want to do that. Of course I want to do that." I mean, even if they didn't want to breastfeed, they were willing to express their milk so we could feed it to the babies. And I wrote some papers, and some other people around the country did some research, and it became obvious that if you started mothers pumping early after birth, if you did skin-to-skin, also called kangaroo care, if the mom actually was in the nursery with her baby a lot of the time, you could help mom increase her milk supply and get more milk to get into more sick, premature babies. And that time was very exciting because we were really learning how to help the moms and using the milk more. Then we discovered how to use fortifiers to make the little guys grow well enough, because human milk is great for babies, but it's really great for big preemies and full-term babies. Premature babies have higher protein needs, higher mineral needs, higher fat needs, and so they don't grow well on unfortified mother's milk. And we were learning all of that. We were learning how to fortify the milk properly to get the babies to grow well. And so right at that same time, other experts in the field around the country were saying, well, you know, pediatricians in general, and even neonatologists, my group, don't know that much about breastfeeding support and don't know that much about human milk. And that's when we developed the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine. And there were obstetricians, family practitioners, pediatricians, neonatologists that all came together and decided to write guidelines for clinical care. And that was about 20 years ago. And that turned out to be a huge success. We began to teach pediatricians how to better support breastfeeding and the moms especially. And so my passion for breastfeeding kind of came from working with the moms, also nursing kids myself and sitting there in the pumping room with them and taking care of babies who did better when they were human milk fed. And I was so fortunate to be able to practice during a time when we were learning of that. I mean, we know all that now, but we didn't know that 20 and 30 years ago. So as I look back, that's one advantage of being older. You get to look back and see what were the big deals. That was a really big deal. I mean, it wasn't just a ventilator. It wasn't just artificial surfactant. It wasn't just how to treat infections. It was give a baby their mother's breast milk that made a huge difference in how premature and sick infants did in the NICU. It was just so much fun to be on the cutting edge of that whole movement. And today people just sort of go, oh yeah, of course I'm going to breastfeed. And I just think it's exciting to talk about the history of that because it really was a little bit of a struggle at the beginning until we learned what we were doing.
Oh, you really were and are such an important part of that history. And I agree. I think that perspective is really important. You know, one of the questions that comes up whenever we do like prenatal consultations is, you know, do you know the history of your mother, or your grandmother, or sisters, aunts, anybody in your family with breastfeeding? And a lot of the time it's not a great story. And they're like, you know, I wish they would have breastfed me. And I'm like, well, let me remind you that things were different. Your mom was probably told that formula was better than breast milk. Like there's a lot that has changed, you know, and to put it in context, I think is important because we have come such a long way. I'm curious throughout that time that, you know, you started advocating for this increase in breastfeeding support and use of human milk and working to support that. Was there resistance that you encountered either from colleagues, hospitals, the parents themselves? I'm curious how that went because I can't imagine it was just, oh yeah, Dr. Landers says this is great, let's do it. But maybe.
There's always resistance to do something that's new. It's harder to support a breastfeeding mom in the NICU because you have to get her started pumping early. She has to be there and do some skin to skin. She has to pump 6 or 8 times a day. She needs to understand even before delivery that her milk is going to make a huge difference in her baby's outcome. She needs to be motivated. And the staff needs to know that it's the best thing for the baby. So when I was at Arkansas Children's, I had some nurses who said, what is the big deal? Why don't you just use formula? And I would say, well, they actually do better on breast milk. And she said, and somebody else said something like, well, it's dirty. I don't want to help a mom with breastfeeding. And I said, that's a real antiquated attitude. It's not dirty. It's the best thing in the world. We're mammals. We are meant to nurse our youngs. And so, yes, there were biases and prejudice against it, whether it was from nursing staff or other physicians. But as the science came out and as lactation consultants were allowed into the NICU to support the moms because NICU nurses could be too busy to support the mom. Things got better and LCs made a name for themselves. They could take a mom who had pumped her milk 6 or 8 times a day for 6 weeks for her 28-weeker, and the kid's now 34 weeks, and help mom put the baby to the breast. And guess what? The little darling could actually nurse for 3 or 4 minutes and get some milk. And mothers were elated, and the nurses were so happy, and the LCs were helpful, and the doctors went, wow, I never believed this would happen. And so it was this whole process of expanding the team, if you will, because the nurses didn't know as much as the LCs and dietitians in some instances. Some of the doctors in my group and pediatricians didn't know how to manage breastfed premature babies. And after discharge, they might just put them on preterm formula. So there were lots of different attitudes about what was the right thing to do. And it did take a lot of saying, here's the science. This is what we know. Here are the follow-up studies. Here are the control trials to convince people that it was worth the effort. It is a whole lot easier to feed formula to a sick baby. It is a whole lot better to feed their mother's milk to a sick baby. It just takes a whole lot more work because you're working with the mom. Mom's not your patient, but she's crucial to the well-being of your patient. So it actually increases the work a little bit. And I think that's why some physicians were resistant to it. Now all that is past. Now everyone knows human milk feedings are best for neonates. One thing I didn't mention, premature babies who are fed their mother's milk, even if they never breastfeed, if they just get tube fed their mom's milk, they do better on developmental follow-up scores and IQ scores at 18 months and 2 years of age. That is amazing. That means that what protein and amino acids that they're getting in their body and developing their brain are so important that they do better having been fed their mom's milk. It's just amazing, even if they didn't go home breastfeeding. And those studies were done at a lot of big city county hospitals where moms would pump for, 4, 5, 6 weeks and then kind of give up. And the babies would go home formula fed. Even if they had had 1 month of human milk feeds, they did better at 18 months and 2 years of age. I think there's another cohort that's going to be examined at 4 years, and that data should be published pretty soon. So we know that the development is better. Babies just do better if they're fed their mom's milk.
Oh, it's so important to look at those things and to really talk about this because it's part of informed consent, for one, but that can be such a motivating factor. Like you talked about, it's not just the mechanics of pumping the milk and bringing it to the baby. It's also that there has to be this motivation of the mother to do that. She has to put in a lot of work. So if you know that and you're like, wow, I would love to give my child the biggest advantage possible, especially since they have to be in the NICU. So that's incredible. And on that note, like you're saying, there's this huge benefit to the mother's own milk. Maybe we could shift gears a little bit and talk about donor milk, because I think oddly enough, there's still like a hesitation on the part of some families about that. Like, oh, that's someone else's milk, which, when you drink cow's milk,
that's someone else's cow.
Yeah. You don't know those cows. Just kind of funny, but donor milk is so important because it's human milk, but yeah, maybe you could talk about that a bit since you did the milk bank and everything as well.
I would love to. In Arkansas, I did the mother's own milk bank. And then when I moved to Austin, Texas, there was a donor milk bank in Austin, the Mother's Milk Bank of Austin. And I was invited to be the medical director there. And I learned about process of pasteurizing donor milk. And I learned how the donor moms are screened very carefully for hepatitis B, hep C, HIV, all the STDs. They have to have a drug history. They have to have all the lab work done. They can't even take ADHD meds and donate milk. So it's a very, very precise process to select moms who have a lot of milk, whose babies are thriving, so they have extra milk, and then they donate it to the milk bank. The milk is pooled, and then it's pasteurized, and only babies who have a doctor's prescription to get the donor milk get it. And of course, it's refrigerated or frozen. It's shipped frozen on ice. It's a little expensive. Donor milk is still very expensive for hospitals to purchase. But there are some reasons that some women can't breastfeed or can't produce breast milk. Moms on drugs that preclude breastfeeding. Moms, there are not very many of those, you know, like lithium, heroin, methadone, all of the regular drugs, the antidepressants and other antibiotics, those are all totally compatible with breastfeeding. Some moms have had previous breast surgery and can't breastfeed. And so they want an alternative because we don't want them to feel bad if they can't breastfeed or they're taking medicine that excludes them from nursing. They want an alternative, and that alternative is pasteurized donor human milk. When the process is very controlled and carefully done to make sure the donors are healthy. Now, there are 28 milk banks around the country now. There's a Human Milk Bank Association of North America. And so all the children's hospitals and all the NICUs in our country use milk from one of those milk banks. Some of your listeners have probably heard about the sale of donor milk on the internet and matching donors and recipients on the internet. And I'm here to say, in correlation with the opinion of the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine, that process is not safe. When you buy or receive milk, donor milk on the internet, get it from your neighbor, you don't know about that donor mother. You don't know her history of drugs, medication. You don't know the tests that she's taken to make sure that she's clean, so to speak. And so it's a little risky for that reason. Sometimes the milk is shipped in a condition that's not safe. It's not totally refrigerated or frozen. Sometimes the milk is diluted out with cow's milk. There have been reports of that. Sometimes the milk is infected and has bacterial overgrowth. Those things don't happen when the milk comes from a donor human milk bank. They only happen when people are trying to make the best of it with their neighbor or on the internet. So I would caution your listeners against trading breast milk and accepting donor breast milk from a friend or someone you don't know on the internet. There are some risks, and I think moms need to understand and talk to their pediatrician about it, because they don't want to give their baby something that's harmful when what they're really trying to do is give them something beneficial.
That's such a good point. Yeah. I think the number of times I've counseled people, and I know it's come up in an episode before where I've said, you know, if you were to properly screen an informal donor, odds are three questions in, they don't want to do that work, and they're not going to go get their labs drawn and give that to you. Like, if you want to safely screen somebody, I just don't think that person that you're getting it from is willing to put in that effort, which I don't blame them, because they're kind of like, oh, why, you know, but someone else is willing to take it without those questions, unfortunately. So it becomes a really tough proposition where are you making concessions on safety because you just would rather have the milk than not? And, you know, yeah, it's unfortunate. So I'm glad you said something about that.
It is. And I hate to be discouraging to moms who have a perfectly healthy neighbor who's got extra milk. But you just have to be careful because you're feeding your own baby something that you do not fully know whether they're medications or chemicals or herbs or infectious agents in that milk. I mean, there may be a virus, there may be cytomegalovirus in that milk, not just hepatitis or HIV. So I want moms to be very, very careful with how they get donor milk and to recognize that their pediatricians can help them get milk from a certified, accredited donor human milk bank.
Yes, I appreciate that. And I think too, that to your point, right, like that realistically, it's a small minority of moms that are not going to be able to produce enough breast milk. The issue is around, you know, a lot of external factors, the support, the accessibility of things, the affordability of things to, you know, get the right pump, to pump enough, you know, all of those things to make it happen. And so if we can support moms in that, my goodness, well, we'll have a lot better outcomes, I assume.
Exactly. That support, I think, is 95% of the solution. Mom's motivation is huge, but if she's not properly supported, she's going to be sort of left in the dust. And then they'll have a baby ready to nurse and a mom that doesn't have a supply for her baby. So it's maternal support is just crucial to make breastfeeding work, whether it's a NICU baby or a full-term baby who's struggling to gain weight. Maternal support is top of the list of solutions, top of the list.
Yes. Oh, so true. And one of the things that I really appreciate that you talk about a lot, like we'll link up like your Instagram and social media and whatnot in the show notes so people can check it out. But that's kind of what I was like, wow, this woman is awesome. Because you talk about this need for, you know, the care of the mother. And I think that really is what we're talking about in terms of, you know, moms providing breast milk, but in general as well, right? And so, you know, especially moms who are working, which is most moms these days. So, you know, you were a working mom yourself. You even said how it was so hard for you with your first to provide that breast milk. We didn't have the pump options we do these days either. But I'd love for you to talk about that because you do have this, you know, kind of personal, professional experience with all of that. And you've even written a book kind of on the topic as well. So I think hearing from you and your expertise about what moms really need, you know, to be supported is really important.
Yes. Thank you for bringing that up. I don't think that we talk about the fourth trimester or matrescence enough. The fourth trimester is that newborn period where mom is learning to care for her baby, learning how to breastfeed properly, and she's also becoming a mother. And during that time, she is deluged with so many different hormonal changes in her body, that on top of sleep deprivation, that on top of whatever her baby needs that's different than the average baby, that on top of how much help she has at home, women in our culture are placed in an untenable situation. If they don't have help, if they don't have adequate sleep, if they don't have the support they need, breastfeeding can be the most challenging thing that a new mom faces. And if you're sleep deprived and you haven't had more than 4 or 5 hours sleep in 6 weeks, a night in 6 weeks, you're going to be in tears if your baby's crying after you nurse them and not willing to sit and think through what might be going on. And I don't think Dr. Google has all the answers for new moms. I think new moms need support from experienced healthcare providers, whether it's a pediatrician who knows breastfeeding, whether it's an OB who knows how to recognize postpartum anxiety or depression, whether it's a great lactation consultant who knows how to help a new mom, you know, establish a great latch and make sure she feels she can do it herself, whether it's the PDENT working with the lactation consultant to decide whether or not a baby does have a tongue tie that needs to be released. All of those things are so crucial. Boy, I went through that with my own daughter. Bless her heart. You know, here I am, a breastfeeding expert, and she wanted to nurse her daughter. And she, it was so painful. And she had had depression during her pregnancy and had stopped her antidepressants against my advice. I'm not sure whether her psychiatrist recommended that or not. Most do not recommend stopping during pregnancy. But anyway, her milk supply was fantastic, but the baby did have a tongue tie and it hurt her a lot. We went to see a lactation consultant and got some adaptations that helped. But my daughter was so sensitive to pain that by the time we made it to the pediatric dentist who was going to do the release of the tongue tie, she had decided, I'm just going to pump and bottle. And I said, that's fine, honey. And she had great milk supply and the baby gained weight and they were happy. But I'll tell you, that experience made her depression worse. And we know that so many mothers who have challenges with breastfeeding have any breastfeeding difficulty that contributes to their developing postpartum depression. There's some studies going on to try to tease out what those relationships are. But clearly, women who have difficulties breastfeeding are more likely to have postpartum depression, which is very common. 1 in 8 pregnant women have some degree of depression after delivery. And so to get back to the support of the mother, whether it's the spouse or the partner or the best friend or the mother or mother-in-law that has good breastfeeding experience, we have to help the new mother figure out what's going on, what she can do with her baby, give her the agency she needs to take care of her baby herself, and then she's going to feel good about nursing or pumping and bottle feeding. I saw that with my own daughter, and it really brought it home to me that if she hadn't had me there to hold her hand, to take her to the LC, to hook her up with a pediatric dentist, I think she wouldn't have made it. I mean, it's just so traumatic to have difficulty. And her husband wanted to help, but he didn't know what to do. He didn't know anything about breastfeeding. So we had good LCs, we had a good pediatrician, we had a good pediatric dentist, and everything worked out fine. But it was so traumatic, Jacqueline, that when she had her second baby, he was a late preterm baby and he didn't feed very well. And about 12 hours of age, he had a low blood sugar. And she was in tears again because, oh my God, she thought she had done something wrong. Well, he was too sleepy to wake up and nurse. And they gave him some donor breast milk. And his blood sugar came up and she tried to nurse and he was kind of lazy, like preterm babies are, kind of weak, suck, swallow. And she said, that's it. I've had it. I'm going to pump and bottle feed again. And I said, honey, you can nurse this baby. He doesn't have a tongue tie. It's okay. And she said, no, I'm not going through any of that again. I know I have a good milk supply. I'm just going to pump and bottle feed. I said, okay, fine. And so both of her children received her breast milk for 10 or 11 months, a good amount of time, because she went back to nurse to working as a nurse in the pediatric ICU, which is no easy feat. And so her story represents how crucial it is to support new breastfeeding moms. They're trying to figure out who they are. They're trying to learn their baby. They're trying to feed their baby. They're doing their best to do the right thing. And if they get something said sideways, they get their feelings hurt, they feel guilty, they feel inadequate. We really need to handle new moms with kid gloves because we should recognize that any breastfeeding difficulty puts them at higher risk for trouble. And that the help that they need generally gets them over the hump and helps them to make it and breastfeed their babies safely. So the answer to your question is new mothers need all the help and support they can get. Not going to visit and hold the baby and offer to feed the baby, but going to visit and doing the laundry and loading the dishwasher and letting mom take a nap and letting mom nurse her baby and telling her, you can do this. Kid looks great. He's gaining weight. So I think that we do the wrong thing when we go visit new moms. We put all our attention on the baby and we want to hold them and you know, get in their face and say how beautiful they are. I mean, what we really need to be doing is supporting the mom. The mom is the one who's having this massive transformation, becoming a mother, learning how to take care of her baby. And that's what people in the family and friends can do to help mom. Be supportive. Do not interfere with her learning to be a mother.
Yep. Have you heard of that? Yes. Yes. I mean, how many times, you know, how does that not happen? Right. And out of this obligation for keeping familial relations, you hesitatingly invite your mother-in-law who goes, your baby's crying a lot. Are you sure you're making enough milk? Like that one statement can unravel everything for you. Like, don't allow that to happen. And have, this is what I tell parents too, is like, I don't want this to all be on the mom. Ask your partner to be that advocate for you. Have them be the screener that's like, excuse me, you cannot say that. You cannot come over here and just want to hold the baby. If you come over here, we need you to help there with these things. Like, you shouldn't have to be the sole advocate for yourself. So,
personally, I had to ask my husband to tell my own mother to quit saying, don't you think he needs a bottle? And I mean, I was, here I was a neonatologist. I was breastfeeding. I had a good milk supply. He was nursing well. I mean, we had a good solid 2 or 3 months. And I had to ask my husband to tell her to back off. And that's so common. She had me in tears and she meant well. She just didn't know anything about breastfeeding. So you're right. A spouse or partner or best friend or mother-in-law, somebody has to say, we need to give this mom a break. We're not going to say anything that provides guilt or shame because they're too fragile. New moms are just too fragile.
It's true. And as much as you want to try to be the strong one, right? Like a lot of moms do. I think in recognizing that is so important. And, you know, to your point about your daughter's journey, I mean, countless moms that I and my colleagues have worked with that have gone through the same thing with tongue tie and then subsequent babies and just saying that I'm just going to pump. I don't want to deal with this because it is too much. And there's some, you know, trauma that's happened there. And it's really unfortunate. And it sounds like your daughter she had you. So, right. But to your point, like even having you and these other providers that were part of this story, those breastfeeding difficulties still created issues. And so we need to do everything we can, right?
Right.
You're a healthcare provider. What's your advice for other healthcare providers in the community? How can they better support breastfeeding moms and their babies, even especially in the NICU setting, if you want to go there? Because without that, like we can do our part, right, as families, and somebody can have an amazing family member like you, but we've got to have this buy-in from everyone else, pediatricians, OBs, midwives, you know, whoever it is.
This is such a tender area. You don't want to say, it's not worth it to breastfeed. Let's just give one. Although there are some mothers who say, I'm not willing to do this, I would rather formula feed, or they've had a previous bad experience and they would rather formula feed. And those babies are going to do okay if they're full-term babies and if they have good pediatric care. But what we want to do is to recognize that what we say to mothers matters. That we want them to know that they're capable of doing something that works out well 95% of the time. Only about 2 to 5% of them mothers don't make enough milk to breastfeed. And we want to say to those mothers, it's okay. Formula feeding is fine. Your baby's going to grow up fine. The IQ differences between formula-fed babies and breastfed babies are only a few points. It's not like you're going to harm your child by formula feeding them. We don't want to make mothers feel guilty, but we do want to acknowledge that when they choose to breastfeed, they need help and support. Our culture is not a breastfeeding-friendly culture. Moms are working. 70% of moms are working. Moms go back to work too early. 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 8 weeks. I never even got to stay at home more than 8 weeks with any of my children. Part of that was my own fault, but it's very common. Do they have a good place to pump at work? Do they have a pump they can use at work? Is that place clean and safe? Is it private? Is there refrigeration? Is there a sink? Is there soap and water? The Pump Act that was recently passed is going to make a big difference because it requires employers to provide time and space for mom to express her breast milk once she goes back to work. What about the coworker who says, well, I didn't get 15 extra minutes to go pump? I mean, so moms hear all this stuff from all these different angles. Their employer says, what do you mean you need 30 minutes to go pump and store your milk? And the guy next door says, well, I didn't get a special break, even though there's a law that says mom should get that break. And so mom has to defend herself. She has to defend what she's doing, that she knows it's the best thing for her baby. Not to mention, she's left her baby in the care of someone else. Whether it's at daycare or with a grandparent or with a friend, she already feels guilty leaving her new baby when she goes back to work. So we're heaping so much on top of moms that I want people to recognize that even after moms go back to work, they're still fragile. They still, in our society, lack support for what they're trying to do, which is feed their babies the healthiest way they can feed their babies. Until our culture changes and is supportive of maternal infant bonding, like that takes more than 2 weeks off your job. It probably takes 4 to 6 months after delivery to really feel like a good mom, get to know your baby. I regret only having 2 month maternity leaves. I wish I had had 4 months or more. I was lucky. I had a pediatrician for a husband, and he supported everything I did. Single moms have a really hard time doing the right thing for their babies and carrying milk back and forth and giving express breast milk to the babysitter to bottle feed their baby. It's just this propensity for modern American women to work, go back to work, be separate from their babies. And we're choosing to do that. We either have to or we like our jobs. And that places us at higher risk to fail breastfeeding. And that makes us think in our little brain, deep inside our brain, that we're not a good enough mom. And that's not the message we want to be giving to mothers in our culture. Social media is already giving moms that message. And we don't want breastfeeding failure when moms go back to work to contribute to that message. That's one of my biggest beefs with modern culture. We are not being supportive of moms after they go back to work. And we're certainly not supporting moms on social media. We're making it look like everything is perfect and everybody's doing great but me. And so moms are getting the idea that I must be stupid or wrong or something because everybody else is perfect and they're rested and showered and dressed and their baby's beautiful. And here I am struggling. We need women to know that struggling really happens probably, what do you think, half the time? It's pretty common until you get your feet under you And unless you have support around you, it takes a while to feel really good about being a mom in our culture.
Just as a quick little aside, what Dr. Landers just mentioned about things that you need to be aware of in the workplace, but also the new PUMP Act, we actually did a recent episode on our podcast specifically on the PUMP Act, U.S. breastfeeding laws, and the future of breastfeeding healthcare technology with a wonderful attorney, Bethany Corbin. So that is episode 108. So if you'd like more information on this, if you're a working mom, if you're preparing to go back to work after you have your baby and continue breastfeeding, check out episode 108 of Breastfeeding Talk with Bethany Corbin, and it will give you all of the ins and outs and plus the show notes, have some excellent links and resources that Bethany has thankfully given to us that we've added there for you. So you can check that out on our website, holisticlactation.com/podcast, to get the full show notes and access the podcast again on any platform like the one you're listening to now. Back to the show.
The only time I haven't seen someone struggle is when they already had a great degree of social support around them. Lots of family that was involved and close by. It's not enough to just have a supportive partner at home. It's not enough to just have another family member come in and help you out. I've seen that time and time again. Now, I'm obviously generally working with the people that have problems. So, you know, but it's a conversation that, you know, you're out and about, you're getting your hair cut, you're at a restaurant. I don't know, it comes up, you know, what do you do for a living? Oh, I'm a lactation consultant. And I cannot tell you the number of times I've heard sob stories, and I could probably count on one hand the number of times I've heard success stories that just breastfeeding just went well from the start. I never understood why people have such a hard time. Like, that is the most rare response I've ever received. So do people struggle at least 50% of the time? Yes. Would I say possibly upwards of 75% of the time? Possibly. And at some point along the way, right? And it's that we don't want that. You know, and I think what you're saying is so important. You made a really, really good distinction that I think is so worth saying again, which is that making the choice to breastfeed is not just a choice to breastfeed. It's a choice to get support in breastfeeding, like, because you will need it. Like, something to that effect. You said it much better than I just did, but that's so key, because without that, like, I mean, yeah, it becomes something that either breastfeeding happens short term, it happens with difficulty, you know, number of things may get in the way, right? So, I wish things were so much better. And hopefully, you know, an episode like this is part of that, right? That we're working to make this better. And on that note, you know, I guess you're just such a, what I think is really cool about you, Dr. Landers, is that you, I think there's like a stereotype, right, of maybe, you know, healthcare providers in your role or of your age, like that you're not, you know, up to date with everything. And, you know, but you're not like that at all. And I love that, because we need more people like you. Sadly, you're retired, but you are still, you know, kind of sharing an important message. So I'd love to hear, you know, just what are your, are there resources, words of encouragement for, you know, moms listening out there that are facing challenges in their breastfeeding journey?
Yes. There was an opinion piece in the New England Journal of Medicine, which is one of our premier medical journals. And it was written by a physician who had difficulty establishing her milk supply. I think she had a late preterm baby, 35 or 36 weeks. She said she got help from a lactation consultant. She said she was helped by her husband. She wrote that her pediatrician helped her. She was on triple feeds. You know, you nurse the baby, then you pump your breast to establish a better milk supply, and then you bottle feed pumped milk to the baby. And that process, which is very labor intensive, we all know that, was taking her an hour and a half every 2 to 3 hours. And she ultimately failed for a number of reasons. And as I read her story, I thought, well, did she go to a pediatrician that knew anything about late preterm babies and breastfeeding? Did she have a lactation consultant who really understood how to support moms with late preterm babies? Because they look like they're full term, but they act like little slugs. They're just sleepy and poor feeders and have a weak suck swallow. And it just takes 4 to 6 weeks to get them with the program. And you have to maintain a milk supply and wait until they kind of wake up and learn how to nurse. And as I read her story, I thought, it's so sad that even a physician mom, I think she was a family practitioner, who wasn't trained in breastfeeding medicine, who tried to get support, still failed. And she felt so strongly about it that she wrote this opinion piece. And I think what happened is she didn't get the support she needed, or that she was ambivalent about breastfeeding and having to go back to work, or that she was exhausted, or she might have had a little postpartum depression. What you're pointing out, that all pediatricians are not expert in breastfeeding management, is true. I am sorry to say, some pediatricians were trained how to feed babies with formula, and then breastfeeding came along and got popular, and they weren't trained how to support breastfeeding mothers. Quite honestly, moms are going to need to ask their pediatricians and family practitioners if they have any extra training in breastfeeding medicine, if they're a member of the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine, if they're a member of the section on breastfeeding of the AAP. Those doctors tend to have had extra training in how to support moms, how to work with LCs. OBs are joining the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine and family practitioners for the same reason. All physicians do not understand how to support a breastfeeding mom, and our culture makes it harder for moms. And until we have people like you and me being mothers and helping our daughters along, the culture will not change. So we're arguing for specific certification of pediatricians in breastfeeding medicine. That's probably coming in the future. So moms can talk to their pediatrician before delivery, ask about the pediatrician's interest in supporting breastfeeding, talk to their OB about it, make sure it's not just a second thought, because it's as important to take classes about breastfeeding as it is to take classes about birthing, I think. We can be more supportive in public of breastfeeding moms. I go out of my way when I see somebody nursing in public. I say, oh, good for you. What a good job. Oh, I'm so proud of you. They always smile and they always look at me and I say, keep it up, you know. And I used to be one of these people who would, you know, breastfeed in public and I didn't care. I wasn't timid. My husband would roll his eyes and he would say, you don't have to do that. But I did it anyway to make a point. And I think we can, as a culture, stand up for nursing moms. We can recognize that not all healthcare providers have the knowledge and expertise they need to help breastfeeding moms. And we can ask about that and have conversations. We can all also do what you talk about, which is be very careful in the kind of lactation consultant or the kind of birth expert or birth consultant that we hire to help us. Not all LCs are IBCLC certified, trained. That's a clinical expertise and a level of knowledge that is the highest, the gold standard for lactation consultant. And I think that moms need to know who they're working with and whether or not the lactation consultant and the pediatrician have the training and have the experience to help them. Not only their own family members and other support people, but the healthcare providers. It is very, very.
Oh, so many really great pieces of advice there for everybody, because yeah, there's unfortunately a lot of work that we still have to do ourselves to make sure that we are getting good support and all of that. And that's really, you know, not to like plug myself, I'm not the only one out there doing this, but that's why, you know, myself, a lot of other lactation consultants do so much telemedicine, because there may not be somebody with the skill set that you need where you live, unfortunately. And it would be better for you to get that skill set virtually than not have it. And so, you know, it's harder for us to deliver that kind of work, but we want to, you know, provide it as an option. So yeah, we will, you know, definitely kind of put in the show notes what you mentioned about the Academy of Breastfeeding Medicine and the AAP section on breastfeeding. Those are some great resources, you know, a bit of a directory there to look some folks up. So
yes, definitely.
Yes. Definitely. Oh, I appreciate everything you've shared with us, Dr. Landers. Where can people find you to continue to expose themselves to your wonderful message? And just, you talk a lot about burnout and things of that nature as well, which I love, one of my favorite topics. So maybe just give us a little brief overview.
Oh, yeah. I'm so glad you asked me about that. You know, I love breastfeeding medicine and I love nursing moms, but I switched over and provided an emphasis in my writing and my support for working moms. Because what I see as an older retired physician is working moms who are struggling, who are frazzled, who are overworked, who are comparing themselves to others on social media, who have employers they don't like. They've all just been through this horrible pandemic. They're trying to manage their job and their children, and they're not doing well. Quite honestly, working moms are struggling, whether you're breastfeeding or not. And so I have chosen to focus on working moms and burnout because I feel so passionate about how difficult it is to do everything we're doing today. My daughter has two children now, a six-year-old and a two-year-old. And she's working on her master's to become a nurse practitioner. And one Sunday afternoon, the kids were running around. I was kind of watching, not doing much. And somebody had a little fit about something. And she looked at me and said, "Why is it so hard?" And I went, "Honey, it's hard because it's hard. You have a full-time job. You're in school full-time. You have two little children. This is not easy." And so I want working moms to know that it's not easy to get all this stuff done. And our husbands don't always help us like they should. Our partners don't do 50%. All the surveys show they do way less than us. We have a mental load that's way heavier than our partner. We worry about the soccer costume, uniform, and we worry about the play date, and we're thinking about the shot that needs to get done next week, and our husband's wondering whether he can watch the NBA playoffs, and it's just like totally different. Women, working mothers, think about all these things, not just their job and their children, but all the things that hold that whole web together. And so what I like to talk about is how important it is to take care of yourself as a working mom, to take a break, to get out of the house, to take a walk around the block, to have coffee with a friend, to talk to your spouse after the kids are in bed and tell them, "I'm at the end of my rope. I just really need more help. Can we hire a maid?" I mean, there's so many things that we could get help with and we don't ask. Social media doesn't help us. It just gives us comparisons with folks who look perfect, but they're not really. And so I want moms to know that when they take a walk around the block, it's good for their mental health. When they have coffee with a friend and confide in their friend, it's good for them. When they go out and exercise, walk a couple of miles, it's good for them. When they get adequate sleep, it's really good for them. And when they ask their partner for support, specifically say, "I need you to pick up the kids this Thursday because I want to go do this with my buddy." That's okay to do. I want to give working moms the permission to take care of themselves. I had to learn that the hard way. I bet you did too. We all sort of brave our own way, but as a culture, we're not very good at saying to other working moms, this is hard. What you're doing is hard. It is no easy feat to raise a family, have a relationship, and hold down a job. That's difficult. And so we need to be kinder to ourselves, learn how to take care of ourselves, take a break, give ourselves some grace. And so that's what I'm writing about.
It's the best. And to your point too, I just wanted to say that for any moms who are not working a job outside the home, I often see them thinking that they need to take on so much more than they should by virtue of being a stay-at-home mom. You need a break too. Like it's not a picnic being a stay-at-home mom. In fact, I've been both, and it's way easier to be a working mom, let me tell you. So just wanted to throw that out there.
Interesting. Oh, we need to talk more about this. I had a stay-at-home mom sister.
When work is a break, you know it's hard.
right. And my stay-at-home mom sister-in-law, she was the best baseball mom. All four of her kids were into baseball. And I said, Giggy, you just make this look so easy. And she said, oh, it's not easy. I'm exhausted. You know, I'm always running. I'm always in the car. I'm always going from practice to practice. And I said, yeah, but you do all the stuff at school, all the stuff I wish I could do. And she said, volunteer for that stuff because I know that working moms can't do it. And I said, that is so sweet because we can't. We really can't make it to all the stuff. And so it takes all of us. It takes the whole ball of wax, the whole village to make it work, to raise our kids today. But I do have lots of resources for working moms on my website, SusanLandersMD.com. If moms go there, there's a free burnout checklist that they can find and other free resources. You mentioned my book. I wrote a book about the NICU, my favorite NICU babies, and some stories. Of course, all the parents gave me permission. And I also told stories of my own struggles as a working mother. And my book is called So Many Babies. And people can get that book on Amazon or in Barnes & Noble, wherever. But I wrote the book to let other women know that we all struggle. We all try to do our best. And we just have to learn to be kinder to ourselves and take care of ourselves and each other. So I hope people enjoy the resources on my website. I have a blog there, too. So I can't seem to quit working. It's just a problem.
I was going to say retired, but not retired.
It's a problem, yeah.
So seriously, thank you for putting together those amazing resources. And like I said, we'll link up your contact information and all of those important links in the show notes. And it's been an honor to talk about breastfeeding and motherhood and working and all the things with you today, Dr. Landers. Thank you for being here.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it. This was fun.
Did you know most moms stop breastfeeding in the first month postpartum? I believe succeeding at breastfeeding means having the right mindset. In fact, studies show that the number one factor that determines breastfeeding success is commitment, which is why I've created my incredible audio download of breastfeeding affirmations, where I give you actionable mantras so you can breastfeed your baby with confidence and peace of mind. And best of all, it's free. To get access to this audio and PDF, simply visit holisticlactation.com/mantras, and you can get started right now.